You're listening to KEPW 97.3 FM LP in Eugene, Oregon, serving Eugene, Springfield, and the surrounding areas. Also, live streaming worldwide at www.kepw.org.
Show is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susty, and I've got a special episode for you here on KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kpw.org. All right, the Llano del Rio Collective. I have Rob Herbst from the Llano del Rio Collective in LA. They've come out with a several guides to alternative societies and an alternative look at Los Angeles, and so this has to do with I've just been reading. I just finished Gone to Croatan, and I'm in the middle of The Many-Headed Hydra. And these are people that don't want to live in the capitalist, mercantilist, globalization, state-sponsored corporate society in Los Angeles. So there's this kind of underground society in Los Angeles, and this is a guide to that, and it gives you alternative lifestyles. All right, so that's coming up here. Robbie Herbst from the Llano del Rio Collective, and especially about the homeless, too. If you're interested in the homeless, you may be interested in this. So especially the homeless problem in Los Angeles. So also, don't forget to listen to our newscast. It's on at 1 p.m. on Sundays, and 1 p.m. on Mondays, and 1 p.m. on Wednesdays. The show after this is 80 Grit. Paul plays incredible music that you've never heard before. Also, Dr. Zoom on Sundays. And after this show at 6, not at 5, but at 6, is our youth radio project. We got some youths here doing some really great stuff. Hopefully they're not playing Justin Bieber. But, support independent media. Go to kpw.org if you want to support us and become a sustaining member, or just send us a buck or two. We'd appreciate it. We're low budget here. We don't need much money to run this place, so you get more bang for your buck that way. All right, here on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kpw.org. Coming up, the Llano del Rio Collective with their guides to Los Angeles. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Hey, Robbie.
Yes.
All right, Robbie Herbst from Llano del Rio Collective. How's it going?
It's going well, thank you.
All right, so
how are things up there?
Good. We finally got some rain. We're hoping the God, it's been smoky, so smoky up here, you know, from the fires. That we're so glad to get some rain. So
I'm grateful to hear that.
What about down in LA? Are you guys getting? I mean, other than the usual smog down there.
The weather actually has been delightful.
Right on.
Which is stands in the exception to what it usually is this time of year, and I really don't want to say that because the heat gods of the desert might hear that and decide that they want to start blowing the Santa Anas out towards the sea and give us our usual furnace blast of late summer.
Right.
But we haven't had that this year.
The September heat wave. All right, so tell me a little bit about yourself. You started with the Independent Media Center, is that right?
Yeah. When I was very young, I was involved with some friends in micro radio. And when the first Indie Media Center started to come together in Seattle during the 1999 WTO protests, I joined with that group of people in Seattle forming the Indie Media. And was involved with the radio team up in Seattle and doing the Indie Media Center up there. And then soon thereafter helped to found the Los Angeles Independent Media Center.
Right on. All right, and so you're named for the Llano del Rio was a collective in the 1920s or the early 20th century. And you're named after them?
Yeah, so the Llano del Rio colony was a socialist colony that was founded by Job Harriman, who was a failed candidate for the LA city mayor's race, I think in like 1914 or something like that. And he founded this socialist colony north of LA in the high desert. It ran successfully there for several years before it moved east to Arkansas. But we took our name, the Llano del Rio Collective is named after the Llano del Rio colony, inspired from declensions from capitalism, other ways of trying to be in this world.
Right, so who are the members of the Llano del Rio Collective?
Well, the Llano del Rio Collective is made up of various artists and urbanists in Los Angeles. It is one of those things, or it's a collective in name mostly, though we do have meetings and conversations about directions of and publications that we might want to work on and guides that we want to do and projects that we work on. But primarily, I find myself spearheading most of the things that we do as a collective.
Well, but it started as a theater group?
Nope. I actually started this project coming out of independent media. Over the years, in some publications and projects that we do, have found ourselves collaborating with other organizations. So the most recent guide that we published, which is called Compassion and Self-Deception, was actually a collaboration with a theater company called the Los Angeles Poverty Department, otherwise known as LAPD. And that similarity is intentional, which is so the only time we've ever worked with a theater company was in this current, our seventh guide. But before that, we've had relationships with other organizations like Strategic Concepts and Organizing Power, which is a community-based organization in South LA. That's the most extensive collaboration we've had before the current one with the LAPD, which is a theater company.
All right, so tell me about Compassion and Self-Deception. Mercantilism. It's a protest against mercantilism?
No. Our current guide, Compassion and Self-Deception, a guide to Los Angeles moral crisis, is a is a guide to Los Angeles, like the six previous guides. And the director of the Los Angeles Poverty Department, the two of them, Henrietta Browers and John Malpede, asked me if they could work with the Llano del Rio Collective in creating a piece of theater and in creating one of the guides that we make. And so we sat down and were thinking about the social dynamics that inform individuals being able to look away from the homelessness crisis that's really, really big in the city. And we hit upon this theme of how people either feel for individuals or they lie to themselves about the conditions of people who, you know, who are struggling. And so we developed this concept for a theater piece and for our current guide, which is set out to map Los Angeles from a moral perspective that puts care for the homeless population or the unhoused or the people who are experiencing housing poverty, any ways you want to put that phrase, at the center of the city. And yeah, I think our guide previous to it was called Rebel City, Los Angeles, and that puts at the center of the city grassroots organizations that are trying to build power from the bottom up. So the Compassion Guide, you know, tried to imagine the city as if caring for the homeless or people who are struggling was at the core mission of the city. But more than that, really, the guide tried to just map LA through a lens, or to think through the city of Los Angeles through a moral lens, as opposed to an economic lens or any other ways that, you know, capitalism tells us to see the city.
Well, I mean, this is going on right now where they didn't stop the eviction laws. They lifted the eviction ban and they cut off the subsidies for unemployment. So, I mean, basically that is the attitude is get a job is basically their attitude. And even if you don't, and get a job at slave wages, become an indentured servant. And that is the only, there is no other lifestyle.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there, you know, the LA City Council does have a range of perspectives regarding how to have compassion or self-deceive themselves towards the homeless population in the city. You know, there are two progressive city council people who have a more enlightened position regarding the homeless population, but by and large, the city governance is held by a center right to a right wing perspective on how individuals should be in the city, and you know the idea that doing for the least is the impetus of organizing self governance doesn't really hold sway in the city governance in LA. Though I did want to say that there are exceptions to that in this city. We have a city councilman actually from Venice who himself was formerly homeless, and he definitely has expressed different opinions than what you outlined. But yeah, by and large, that's how the city deals with its homeless population is tries to sweep them under the rug and tries to manipulate people into various relationships of working within the prison system of labor.
Well, because that's just it. I was down there a month ago and the news was saying that they had a plan to just they're going to start arresting people. And yeah. I don't see how. Yep. So that's isn't that kind of a debtor's prison? You know, you're arresting people for being indigent and then they have to pay a fine to get out of jail. So isn't that unconstitutional? I thought that was what our country was, one of our country's things that was based on was that we don't have debtor's prison.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that strikes at a basic issue, which is that, the city and the mayor is has a longstanding strategy to take away the concept that people who are unhoused are human. And if you start to take away people's property, if you start to treat them differently, if you police the unhoused with a different set of laws, they are classed as less than human, and you don't have to give them the same rights that you afford to other people. And, you know, housing activists really are aware of it, that the powers that be are trying to manipulate the laws to really strip away the fundamental rights of homeless people to not be seen under the law as human beings. That they, because they don't have property and because they exist in a state of squalor, let's just say, that doesn't approach what normal people see as human, they must not be human. They must be a lesser class and therefore don't have the same rights as you or I. And they can be stripped of their property whenever they want. But, you know, counter to that is a very robust counter-organizing to that dehumanization.
Well, and so that's why your guide is necessary, though, is that this is perpetuated by the media in Los Angeles too, and this is what people don't see. This is what your guide is trying to get people to see, that there's a different way of looking at this.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's the media or the politicians, either way, you know, it's a fundamental difficult thing to live in a city where, you know, if let's just start with someone like me, who is a person who has, you know, some comfort in the city, and it is very, very difficult to comprehend how it is that I could live in a city where there's, you know, at once so much wealth and so much poverty. And it shocks your humanity to have to experience that. And the guide kind of tries to be at that moment where the person who does not live in a state of houselessness in the city has to wrestle with what is this that I'm witnessing day to day, this real experience where you see people who live in a state that we don't expect to see in a society such as ours.
Developed country.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
right, they've turned us into a third world country.
You can see it, yeah, where you can see it through the lens of just these people aren't like you, and forget it and move on. Or you can see it through, no, this is a fundamental contradiction of capitalism, and more so than that, you know, morally and ethically, our society has tried to deal with this historically, like through biblical times, and, you know, the foundation of Western morality, and therefore Western law is basically trying to understand how to deal with this crisis of society, where you have people who have and people who don't, and trying to square that contradiction is fundamental to both our moral, our conceptions of morality and ethics. And that's what the guide really tries to parse by looking at the city through that lens of that moral crisis.
Well, and it just reminds me of also the other concept that I wanted to lay down was, you know, in the third world, that we've now, globalization has supposedly brought them a better lifestyle, but you know, they had some famine and poverty, but they were led basically agrarian lifestyles. Now the type of poverty that they have is that they're literally on the streets living in the gutter on the street and searching for a minimum wage job. Whereas before they would at least like in Chiapas, Mexico, you know, they had, and in Cuba too, they have sustainability where they can grow, they can still grow their own food, and LA stopped the South Central Farm where people could grow their own food. So they've made it. They're claiming that they have that this Western civilization is a better lifestyle, but in reality, it's taking away an alternative lifestyle that what was arguably not perfect, but it's not the abject poverty that we're seeing now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, because what I want, yeah, I just want to stick with this. Well, go ahead.
No, keep going.
Well, so I just want to stick with this a little bit more, because it does mention mercantilism. What, to you, what is the difference? Is there a difference between mercantilism, globalization, and neoliberalism? And, you know, isn't that what has brought this abject, this increased abject poverty on, is mercantilism?
Yeah, I guess so. It would take a moment for me to kind of try to figure out the difference between those three states of capitalism. I guess mercantilism is a more primitive form, but yeah, it's fundamentally a question of, like, you know, when society strips away individuals the ability to economically or socially reproduce outside of a state of market relationships, that, you know, and tries to mediate individual market relationships through larger things, and takes away people's fundamental abilities to reproduce their own sustenance.
And then skims the money off the top.
The condition of poverty in the city. It was like, you know, you have people who have to live under market capitalism and can't find a place within it. And, you know, further shocks of neoliberal capitalism, whatever, et cetera, et cetera.
But they're extracting the wealth and what the worker produces, their production value, they're extracting, skimming the money off the top, and then sending it, and then selling it overseas, and extracting it out of the community instead of keeping it within the community, within the cycle. So, yeah. All right. So, let's see. So you have these other guides that you have. What's the PowerPoint? You went into the Rebel City a little bit, right? Did you want to talk more about the Rebel City?
No, the question, I mean, PowerPoints was a guide that we did that was actually led to the Rebel Cities guide. In some ways, each of these are sequential, one feeds the other. But so the PowerPoints guide was coming out of the Occupy movement several years later, out of Occupy, which I guess today is the 10th anniversary of the Occupy movement. We were trying to think about the ways that power expresses itself directly in Los Angeles, and trying to think about how individuals can intervene directly within the relationships of power that are specific to the city of LA. The Los Angeles occupation actually was at City Hall, and that site really triggered in a lot of people the thought of what actually goes on in City Hall, and actually how does power work in the city of Los Angeles, and what and how do you have to know in order to get things done and to do things and to make change in the city. And for the guide that led to, we chose to work with an urban planner and an urban thinker named Rostin Wu, who moved to Los Angeles after living in New York City and founded an organization there called the Center for Urban Pedagogy, which is an organization that explores urban development through an activist lens, and actually has a museum and an exhibition space and an organization devoted to demonstrating ways that cities are developed. And Rostin moved to LA, and we asked him if he could do a guide for us that maps power and how power is organized in the city. And my and other people in the collective concept was that, oh, this is great. Rostin will like read the city charter, and then he will speak to some people, and he'll come up with a flow chart of power relationships in the city. But instead of doing that, Rostin actually had formed a relationship with this organization called SCOPE, Strategic Concepts and Organizing Power, in South Los Angeles, which is a heritage organization whose history goes back to the 1960s. And they had developed what they called a power tool, which was a set of questions and practices that would help organizations strategize their relationships to individuals and organizations of power within the city of Los Angeles. And what Rostin did for our PowerPoint guide was basically interpret this organizational practice that Scope had into a foldable pocket-sized guide so that people of everyday walks in life could engage with this tool that Scope had been successfully using for 30 years. And that became the PowerPoint guide. And so, like all of our guides, they're handed out for free to individuals and to organizations to distribute around town. And particularly with the PowerPoint guide, it's been picked up by other individuals and organizations and been handed out all over the United States for people to use from all walks of life to think about how they might want to organize a struggle and in relationship to both adversaries and allies.
Well, because
that was the PowerPoint guide.
Because the LA has a history of the power seems to be in the developers of Los Angeles, like Chavez Ravine. They just destroyed a bunch of low cost housing to build Dodger Stadium, and I know Chandler was, and you know the movie Chinatown talks about Mulholland.
Yeah.
And so what about and then I just did a thing last week on the South Central farm, and it seems to me that the power that the LA does not seem to respond to civil disobedience very well. And I was just reading, you know, the Grapes of Wrath, they talk about in Salinas how they stopped the Okies from coming into California. Yeah. And this happened in Los Angeles also. The LAPD stopped the Okies with rifles from coming into Los Angeles because that was the route to the San Joaquin Valley, or one of the routes to the San Joaquin Valley. So that's how far back the LAPD and the power of Los Angeles goes. Anything on that?
Yeah. I mean, it goes back earlier. The city charter is really disempowers the way the LA city governance is set up is to really disempower individuals. For our city, there, I believe it's either 14 or 15 representatives for the city of LA for the neighborhood. There are 14 or 15 city councilmen versus New York City, let's just say, that has over 40 people doing a similar job. So, and the city of Los Angeles is exponentially larger than the city of LA, and it's an exponentially smaller number of representatives who are meant to serve an equal population on a much larger land scale. And so that sets up this dynamic where individuals, you know, have very little ability to influence their governance. It's just fundamentally an anti-democratic system. And it was set up that way, you know, to empower the wealthy classes who have always run the city. And historically, they've been developers.
And I noticed these cities, it's the same in Eugene, that it's the city manager. I was in 29 Palms, too. I tried to do some stuff in 29 Palms. I was trying to get solar panels put on the roofs in 29 Palms, where the sun shines like all the time, you know, and it's all the power is in the power of the city manager, they just refer you to the city manager, even though, like you say, the city council, it's not supposed to be that way, and you have committees that each council person sits on, but they all end up referring to the city manager in the end. I noticed.
Yeah, well, it's odd because we have a weak mayor and a strong city council system. The mayor really doesn't have as much power as a single unit. In many ways, his role is functional, mostly as a functionary, and it's the city council people who do all of the. Yeah, as I'm saying, the whole system of governance in the city is counter to how we think power is operated, because the executive really is disempowered in the in. You know, does not have a bully, does not have the power that the way the city council people do. So,
well, yeah, so can you strange. Give me an example in the PowerPoint guide, though, of way a way to gain some power, even though it probably doesn't work in Los Angeles? But is there? Can you give me an example
well,
of how
no,
to gain power?
The guide is the guide walks individual users through a series of exercises where it has you strategize a campaign, and it has you strategize your relationship. So it's a workbook. It doesn't map it out for you, but it helps you move through a series of exercises that helps you see your relationship to power. So for example, when I have spent time fighting City Hall and its developers, you know, doing exercises in the PowerPoint guide helped me to realize, oh, I have relationships with people in the media. I have relationships with the tenants union. I have relationships with people who are involved with questions regarding public space and urbanism. And the guide helped me strategize. Doing the exercises in the guide helped me think through how those relationships are strategic and how they could change and how they can alter. So it's a workbook. That's actually universally applied, though it does come from the specific context of Los Angeles, a place where power is really diffuse strategically by the city governance to keep the capitalists in charge.
But still, you want to look at your allies in any campaign. All right, so your next
exactly.
guide is Utopias of SoCal. Has there been utopias in Southern California? I know there's you mentioned Newtopia for one thing, but go on.
Well, Newtopia was a book published by a theorist named Chris Carlson, an urban activist named Chris Carlson, who's one of the founders of Critical Mass, famously in San Francisco, and also the Process World zine from the late 70s, and really interesting person. And Nowtopia was kind of the inspiration for an earlier project of ours. But the Utopias guide was, just kind of locates these alternative histories of Los Angeles where people have, you know, invested their energies in things besides social reproduction within the system of capitalism, but looked at ways to, you know, reproduce other ways of being in the city that are based around whether it's a weirdo religious belief or living environmentally together or Chicano power or hot tubbing. I mean, just a vast profusion of different ways that people have imagined and desired to live together communally. And, you know, Southern California, just as Eugene, is rich with histories of people, you know, imagining how they want to live in life. And because power is so diffuse in Los Angeles, you know, and LA used to be in a relatively affordable city, people have eked out these places where they can, you know, experiment with their lives and, you know, has produced a profusion of bizarre ways of being in the world and experiments, whether they're overtly political or things that we might identify as lifestyle experimentations to just oddball beliefs.
All right. I'm talking to Robbie Herbst of the Llano del Rio Collective. He's got guides to LA's to Los Angeles that show a different side of Los Angeles. So the next one is the Antagonist's Guide to the A-Holes. We have to clean that up, of Los Angeles. This is KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene. All right. So the Antagonist's Guide to the A-Holes of Los Angeles. What is that one?
That one is a blast. So the Antagonist's Guide to the A-Holes of L.A. is a guide to the jerks around town. And it proposes, and it's basically a listing of 85 war profiteers, right-wing media goons, financiers, capitalists, some individuals that people found to be distasteful. We actually went out in public for this guide and with a clipboard and just asked folks, who do you think is a jerk around town? And the Antagonist Guide to the A-Holes of L.A. presents, you know, these 85 organizations, corporations, and individuals, and kind of at the same time presents the city, presents a history of L.A. as one built on social antagonism, and then talks about how sites of social antagonism build culture and build histories. So it's, you know, it takes a perspective that antagonism is something that is productive for culture and really encourages people to engage antagonistically with the city. And it, with these particular locations, gives addresses and names where they might want to, you know, spend some time thinking about how to perform.
Well, yeah, because I remember there was a radio station there. I can't think of the, what it was, that I think it was producing Rush Limbaugh, and I wanted to do a demonstration against that radio station. But anyway, it might have been KFI or one of those. But okay, so the next one is Scores.
Yeah.
Or you got anything on that? Was there a radio station
I mean,
in
that's
the
actually,
in the Antagonist
Guide? No, I just wanted to say, you know, there tends to be this perception that being negative or being critical is not a nice thing. But the Antagonist Guide to the A-Holes of L.A. really presents this history, this idea that as a city, L.A. has advanced tremendously because of social antagonism. And, you know, like many cities, the proletariat, let's just say the proletariat's unrest really alters history. Mm-hmm. And whether, you know, we perceive like revolts or riots as negative, and whether we perceive revolts and riots and protests as failures, whenever such things happen, they're inevitably need to be recuperated by capital. And, you know, you could see those recuperations as ameliorative, or you can see them as transformative. But it is undeniable that the history of L.A., and as many urban places in the United States, is built on an agonistic relationship and agonistic competition. So the guide really presents this history and presents a history of art's relationship to antagonism and culture's relationship to antagonism, and then presents all of these locations as stages where individuals might come and perform this ritual of democracy, which actually touches really well upon the Scores for the City guide, which presents, you know, the term scoring is a musical term, like to make a score means to make a composition, but it's also an avant-garde art term where one creates a score to how one acts and behaves in a particular time and place. So Scores for the City presents these social choreographies, these public behaviors that people have done in the past in the city that are just strange and off, and presents them as popular histories. And for example, there was this guy, I don't have the guide right in front of me, but I'll go and get it, who spent an entire year going to the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley, and for 5 minutes a day, he would stand there in public and give the library the finger. And no one knows his history, but that's such a great piece of theater. And this individual spent a year doing it, and no one knows that history. And that's great L.A. history there. That's great L.A. theater history.
Well, and it calls attention to a problem that needs to be addressed. You need to call attention to these problems, and you might find
the
allies. Again, there's a way to find – you may find some allies that way too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I don't even know if anyone ever joined him in doing this performance. I don't know if there were other people. I mean, I know that he was a teacher from LAUSD and was just really despised Reaganomics, and particularly the way that it inflicted, you know, inflicted California budget cuts to education. And so he had no pride in
Well, and that's partly the homeless issues too. I remember when Reagan let out closed all the mental institutions and let all the homeless out. There used to be a gal on Cahuenga where Ventura Boulevard turns into Cahuenga, and they would let her out, and she would talk at the signal there. And after Reagan closed those things down, that lady disappeared. They just used to let her out because they knew she would come back every day. Mm. And that lady disappeared one day because they closed the mental institution. Reagan closed the mental institutions. And I mean, library is like a Confederate statue to glorify hatred, basically, in a way.
Yeah.
Okay, so a map for Another L.A.?
Yeah, so the map for Another L.A. was our first guide. And what it does, it maps these locations in the city where individuals were it's 11 years old. I'm going to go to the language. I have different perspectives on some of the language now than I did. But I'm going to invest myself in the language of the guide. And at the time, and still going on, but at the time, there was this large push for things that I and the collective, and this guy was particularly more collectively produced than others, were thinking as post-capitalist. And those were projects that sometimes, those are projects that were trying to develop systems of being in the city based off of generosity, and sometimes those systems of generosity were being done because of an express politics. But other times, people were just doing it because they were pleasurable. So, like, we're talking about like guerrilla gardening practices, beekeeping practices when keeping bees in the city was against the law, or biodiesel collectives, or tool sharing spaces. And the map for Another LA cites 50 projects that were going on in the city 10 and 11 years ago, where individuals were setting up these spaces that, you know, could operate within capitalism, but also could be pointing at something else, a kind of nascent collectivism or socialism or eco-socialism. And that's what the map does. It locates all these different ways that people were actively experimenting on how to be together in the city. And the theory behind that came from actually from Chris Carlson's book Nowtopia that you had mentioned at one point, which tries to think through ways that people are creative, collectively express creativity in their spare time, and how, you know, capitalism tends to want to say that your job is what your function within capitalism is what you do from 9 to 5. But Chris Carlson's book Nowtopia says that's bullshit. your job of what you do really within society is what you do when you're not on the clock, and when you're finding pleasure in the world, and when you're doing things that really express your desire of what you want there to be in the world. And it's from this place of passion and creativity and care. That's where society comes from. And, you know, Carlson's Nowtopia talks about that, but there's this brand of eco-feminist theory called Gibson-Graham Capitalism by Catherine Gibson. And I think her name was also Graham, that actually they developed their ideas of post-capitalism from, if I'm not mistaken, kind of women's communes in Southern Oregon, basing, you know, their conceptions of economics and women's economics on care work that they saw going on in women's communes. And so one of the perspectives developed through the guide is Chris Carlson's Nowtopia, but also Gibson Graham economics, feminist economics, is something that's brought, you know, lifted up in the guide. And all of these experiments with these alternative approaches to the economy, meaning what one does with this time and how one produces wealth, that aren't just about like making money for the man, but like making they're, dreams come true.
They're cyclical instead of extractive is all we're really asking. Because I notice you still use the word economics. It's not like we don't want any or we don't recognize, although economics is not really a science at all, but it's not that we don't recognize an economy. Because Carlson also did the critical mass bike rides too, and it just like you're saying this these guides are to try to wake people up, and people just don't see, like when we did a critical mass bike ride in L.A. and people were complaining that it stopped the traffic. Well, I'm sorry that it stops your traffic, and I was working at a doctor's office as a file clerk, and the doctor was mad because we were demonstrating against the Afghan war. And down there, it blocked the freeway, you know, the 405 freeway. It caused traffic. And she was mad that she couldn't get couldn't pick up her kid from school. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but your system is not the only system. And so that's what these guides do, right, is they call attention to that there might be another way.
Yeah, I mean, Llano del Rio sees itself as we make frames in which to see the city through, like a different lens to explore it. And, you know, as adults, we're told that our function in the city is to make enough money that we could have our nuclear lives. And a function of the city is to ease the relationship between the individual to their work site, to their place where they consume in their home so that they can reproduce and the system could keep reproducing. But I really don't know anyone whose singular goal in life is to, you know, to be trapped within that system. And, you know, though, you know, the way that that system of capitalism has reproduced itself, particularly, you know, in a city like LA, is to put before you that that's the only myth that's being upheld. You know, even this, you know, L.A. is at the center of the film industry. But when you're in town here, you don't see many fantasies. I mean, you see many individuals are caught in a fantasy of self-celebrity like you do. Yeah, but you don't see, like, the fantasy of the still existent, you know, Aslan underground, the indigenous world that really is still here, or the fantasy of the neo-pagan sex cult founded by mystics of the early Hollywood, or you don't see the fantasies of the 1960s hippies, or the fantasies of the Black Panthers, or the fantasies of the hip hop generation, or, you know, you only see the singular fantasy of capitalism.
Well, and the LA, you know, River is the
great... guides really offer a way. The guides really offer a way to see the city in other ways.
Well, the LA River is a great metaphor because it used to be an arroyo. So the city isn't even they literally forced the river into a drainage ditch, and in this to fulfill this ideal of state-sponsored corporatism. So, okay, so, all right, so Robbie Herbst of the Llano del Rio Collective, how do you get these guides? I mean, you have to live in L.A. to get one for free, but you can still get these guides to
right
L.A.
Right now, our Compassion and Self-Deception Guide, because it was done in collaboration with the L.A. Poverty Department in a special relationship, we are actually still mailing this guide out to individuals across the United States. So if any of your listeners out there are interested in seeing one of our guides, we will ship it for free to Eugene, Oregon. So all they need to do is go to our website, Llano del Rio Collective. Well, just look up the Llano del Rio Collective guide and you'll find us. Send us your postal address and we'd love to mail you one. We're still mailing them for free. And the other guides, we're out of them. We published these in the 2000 of these generally, and we get rid of them because we distribute them for free. But this one, we have a larger print run, and we have a mailing budget that was given to us through a our collaboration with the LA Poverty Department. And so we're mailing them broadly, and we want this guide to get out there. So,
right, and,
yeah.
But you'll
love
take
to send it to somebody up there.
You'll take donations, though, too.
Yeah, but we could be generous. So we don't need your donation. But yeah, if someone feels like kicking us money, we'll use it for our next publication.
And this could be valuable for your own, these things could apply to your own city, not just LA.
Yes. Yeah, the great thing about doing this project actually is several of our guides have spurred other collectives and organizations in different cities to replicate them. So actually the Map for Another LA, there is a group in Detroit that did a version of it, that for the city of Detroit. I know about that one. And then the Antagonist Guide to the A-Holes of LA, there was a Chicago version that was printed of that, and that was called the Jagoff's Guide to Chicago, and using a local term for a-hole in Chicago. And then I was told, and I forget at what point where it was, but there was another version of an a-hole's guide that was done to another city. So, yeah, these guides, they create frames, and they are frames that other people have used to, you know, collectively map cities and to publicize their jerks or their utopian spaces or their post-capitalist spaces or their different ways of moving around the town.
All right, Robbie Herbst of the Llano del Rio Collective, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, Curtis, thank you so much for your interest.
All right, have a good one. Keep up the good work, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
This is awesome. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Black Unity, a group that has been active in our local Black Lives Matter protests, is reaching out to the youth in our community during the pandemic.
You are listening to KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon. Homegrown community radio, simulcasting at www.kepw.org.
I'm Amy May, end-of-life counselor and death doula at Whiteberg Clinic. The prospect of dying can be scary, but also profoundly meaningful. I provide counseling and care coordination, a focus on easing your burdens, and supporting how you want to live until your last moment. For more information, call 458-215-1170 or email amymay@whitebergclinic.org. It would be an honor to walk beside you in your journey.
This message is brought to you by Whitebird Clinic and Eugene Area Radio Stations. Here's...
All right, welcome to 80 Grit. You're listening to KEPW.